All right, we're going to get started. I'm glad to see so many people here are getting their money's worth from this conference by coming to the last day, last sessions. We're happy because it's coming to an end. It's been a lot of prepping and working and doing things, but it's been a lot of fun. So this session, moving legacy data systems to access services. I'm Gary Devendorf, and we have...
I'm Bob Piper. We're both program managers on the access team.
So we're part of the group that are working on the product, so feel free to yell at us about any features. You won't be the first. that's how we do our job. So I want to ask a couple questions. How many people here are here because you've heard about the access stuff from the conference so far, and now you want to learn more about what's going on with the Access 2013? I'm glad to see that because, you know, people, IT people hear the word access and they usually turn and spit, you know. They, you know, historically they say that
there's
it was great
anger.
In its day, but it's like horses, you know, I can't ride a horse anymore, I need a better environment. But we think we fixed those problems with the old access and the new, it's gonna be a whole new rebirth, so that's good. How many people here, I have to ask, because in the title it talks about Lotus Notes, how many people are coming here because of Lotus Notes? Love you guys. All right. So I added that at the end, only at the end, some really good tips and tricks on that and how to get your stuff from Lotus Notes databases into it. So we'll jump in and get started. We have a lot of content and we will finish on time. So last question, well maybe, but how many people were at the earlier session, my earlier session, or at Steve's earlier session? Okay, good, because there's a little section in the beginning about you know, what access services is, only because it is radically different now in 2013. And so we want to sort of set that. So we're going to talk about what problems we're solving, what is access services, and then it's just going to be the meat of how to move your data into our this new sort of platform. So problems we are solving, well, this is sort of the old, why do I need a database? And also, in an enterprise, you probably don't know it, but there's lots of data that you don't control. It's out there. Now, it could be access databases. I've had customers say, we have 50,000 access databases, which gives me a small heart attack. Then I say, that's okay, the Lotus Notes guys have 100,000, so don't worry about that. But you may not know about these things. Someone created them on a desk somewhere. And it could be mission critical, it could be legal information that people should have controlled. Bad or broken apps is probably the biggest reason why IT people hate access. Because you're running your business, everything's good, and some guy comes to you and goes, here's this application written in Access 18 years ago, and it's mission critical, and it's broken, can you fix it? And you go, hey, I didn't build it. You broke it, you fixed it, it's not my problem. And they always go to top management and go, this is mission critical, I need to do my job, and they come back to you and say, now you must fix it. And that's why people are like, oh, you know, it was poorly architected, you know, VBA code, bad, those kind of things, and you end up sort of recreating it and using your resources and your backlog builds up, fixing these problems. Inefficient business processes, you know, how many times do people, you come to someone's office and do something totally insane?
I heard a good story about that. These conferences are great places to hear horror stories or funny stories. Yesterday, I don't see the guy here who told me it, but talking about inefficient business processes, he worked for a financial services firm, and it was a story about this broker who had an Access DB in his office, and he would enter all his customers' trades into this DB, this desktop DB. At the end of the day, he'd print a report, and he'd walk out and lay this report in the inbox of his assistant, who had an identical Access DB on her machine, and she would enter all the trades in, and the ones that she might have put in while he was off at lunch or playing golf or something. So, yeah, inefficient. And maybe that was by design. They wanted to have two sets of books. I don't know, but...
Yeah, re-entering data, it's a real problem. And it doesn't end up... For people to say, well, I don't care. End users are the other type of person, and they're not going to bother me. And the answer is no, they are, because they're coming and making requests. So you end up with a backlog of sort of nuisance tasks and important tasks. So your IT backlog is a real problem that, again, we're trying to solve that. Backup and restore, security of the data. You know, someone kicks the plug on a server under someone's desk that runs 10 people's environment and now it doesn't work. Hard drives fry, they come to you, can you fix this fried hard drive kind of thing. So having security and backup control over your data. Sharing the data, you know, you want to have some guy who says, I need input to that application. I don't want to go to your desktop and install something. You know, I want to just send you a URL. Say, hey, go ahead and do that. Lack of an upgrade path. That guy with the access database that was used by 2 people, 20 people, 100 people, and now suddenly it wasn't scale, had issues. You're sort of going back to square one and creating that application over again to something that scales more. So these are the problems we're trying to attack. Again, where's your data? Well, everyone says, well, our data is in an Oracle database, it's in DB2, it's in SQL Server, it's here, it's there. And the answer is, it's also, we had a customer, small business, said they keep track of all their customer information in a Word document. Phone number, name, like that. Yeah, they can print labels, you know, but that was what they used because that's what they knew.
And they could search.
Yeah, you can search it. You know, for them, it was, they could print it, and you know, it was kind of good enough, they thought, you know, because for what they were doing. Some of the problems, though, is that if your data, you know, is in a laptop that gets left at the airport, or it's on a thumb drive that walks out and it's secure information, you get a lot of trouble. You hear in the news often that, you know, someone from the government left a device out, you know, somewhere, and it had everyone's social security numbers and something like that. So, and then there's information that people need to use and they need to be able to share and control. I like this picture. I think of that as a thumb drive. You know, the guys. But I actually know a lot of people that do that, the yellow sticky on the wall, the to-dos and kind of like that.
Another, to this point, where is your data? Another story I heard last night, actually, at the Ask the Experts was all about someone who had gotten a colleague had gotten an email with an AccessDB attachment, and they had kept getting at that attachment, or at that DB via the attachment. Every time they wanted to look at it, they would search for that email in their inbox and open it from there. And that worked fine until all the email got purged, and then there was this frantic call to IT, I need to get that DB back. And
right, so mail is the container of your application and your data. So the point is, there's data out there that top management would be horrified if they knew, probably, that's that. And if you can collect that into an environment that's sort of managed and controlled and secure and all those things, you guys are the heroes. And if you can do it in a way so the end users do it themselves and don't bug you, not only are you a hero, but you're a happy hero. So where does access fit in all that? And historically and today, those simple methods of, you know, Word documents and yellow stickies and places to keep your data, they were great because they were easy. No education. I don't have to train you on how to, you know, use a yellow sticky and write a note on that. So it was very simple and very low cost. Great. But it lacked all the structure of, like, a real relational database system. Also lost, you know, those cost a lot of money, though. You're going to pay some developers to write your application in a relational database or a mainframe application to keep track of stuff. Yeah, you want to do, transactions, rollback, referential integrity and stuff. It's a real, like, heavy-duty kind of thing. It's like the semi-Mac truck as opposed to the bicycle. Well, Access fits in the middle of that. We're saying, you know what, you need some structure, but you don't have a lot of money, you know, call before midnight tonight. We got a solution for you. And so if you take the simpleness of and the low upfront cost of your database and your data, Access does that, but also provides, you know, the one version of the truth. You know, my data is backed up, it's scalable out, and so on. So that's how we see Access and always have. Now, huge differentiation here. Desktop application versus the new Access services. We're going to talk a lot about Access services. At this conference, we talked about 95% about Access services, the new cool stuff, the SharePoint apps that we're creating. So desktop Access still exists. We have people having heart attacks all the time whenever we present because they're like, wait a minute, I have all these applications. I want to upgrade to 2013, and I still want to run my old stuff. Still there, still works great. It even is 20 years old. It's been out for 20 years. We had a little celebration. It was kind of fun. The old guys came back to campus and told us stories. Hugely popular. Again, 50,000 Access databases, places. People could create apps very quickly, but they could create really bad apps very quickly, you know, because of the VBA code. People were learning to develop. I talked to so many people who said to me, you know, I created this database and I had to learn VBA to do certain things, and now I've started doing software development and I ended up becoming a developer. Because here it was, I had something I could do that was tangible. So it was really good in its place, still has a place, it's still there. We are going to talk almost exclusively about the new cool stuff, which is creating SharePoint applications with the Access client. And these are data-centric applications that can be created by the end user.
So as you'll see, there's a totally new app experience here. It's very clean and beautiful and consistent from one app to the next. And as Gary mentioned, everything's deployed on SharePoint, so we get all that SharePoint goodness. The URL management and permissions are all inherited. And probably the best thing, it's all built on top of SQL, which is just wonderful. And things like aggregate queries are now possible, where we could never do anything like that before. So we're really excited. And actually, if you look under the covers, the code actually looks like this with those gears. It's pretty cool.
I have to oil them all the time.
All right, so this graphic is an example of an Access 2013 web database. And all of them look just this way. So on the left, you see the tables. Across the top, you see the views. You see a list. And then on the right, you see the place to edit your data. So first, users choose their table. So the tables contain the data.
All right, so this is the end user. Someone sent him a URL. He clicked on it, and this is what he sees.
Right. So choose your table. Second, choose your view of the data in the table. So all of these views relate to the table that you've already chosen. Third, you filter down to the exact record that you're looking for. And every Access 2013 app has the filter and search built right in with no code. And then the right area of the view shows all of the different fields that can be changed and an action bar to take actions on the data. So what I'll do now is show a Access app in action. So here we are in the SharePoint site. This is the site contents. You can see there's a lot of apps. We've been doing a lot for the conference.
They don't have to have that A on it in the red to be an Access app. We can hide that too. So if you're worried about end users giving you grief.
But we like the red and
We like it. That's why we have the shirts. Yeah.
All right. So here we are in an app, and this is a tool tracking app that we built for McKinstry. With McKinstry, I should say. They're one of our beta customers, and they have a problem tracking tools. They do these green energy audits where they go in and check how a building uses energy. And they have a lot of electronic instruments. They were just telling their employees, you can go in, grab a tool, go use it, and please put it back. Well, over time, of course, they get left on job sites or left under the seat of somebody's truck. So they needed a way to track these things. So we sat down with them and created this Access app to do just that. So you see the whole app model in action. On the left, you see the tables to hold the data, a table for tools, a table for checkout history, and a table for jobs. And then across the top, the different views of that data. This particular view is the dashboard. This isn't related particularly to any of the tables, but she wanted a place where there were some simple directions and some buttons to quickly get done the most common actions. But I'll look at a list view of the tools. So the list view is one of the views that you get right out of the box when you create an Access app. It has a list of all the records on the left and the filter box, as I mentioned, an action bar to take actions on the data, and then the details about that particular record on the right. And even better, you see here this checkout history. That is a related items control, we call it. And what that is a view into the checkout history. So this particular tool has a whole bunch of records in the checkout history table. And so right from the tool, we can see, oh, well, here's the records of all these checkouts. So let me just take you quickly through what happens when a user uses the app. So they come in, see the dashboard, read the directions, and they want to check out a tool. So you can see that has now navigated us over to the available tools list. And I'm going to choose a spring compressor, check it out. One thing that's really cool about living on top of SharePoint is that we can really leverage it. So if you look in this pop-up, we've pulled the item name into this pop-up. The checkout date, that's pretty obvious. Here's a job name, so we get to look right into the jobs table from here. And with this autocomplete, I start typing, and it finds a record in the jobs table. But what I was getting at about being on top of SharePoint, checked out to Gary Devendorf. I'm Gary for the moment. So SharePoint has told me who this is. And SharePoint has given me the email address. So users can come in, and we can quickly leverage the fact that SharePoint knows who we are. So I'll check out the tool.
So if you load notes, guys, this is like a common name. It's a variable that's just there because the fact that I'm in SharePoint, it knows who you are. So you can use that inside your macros and things. Who are you? I don't have to ask. Again, I know.
So now I look in the checked out tools list, and I look at Spring Compressor, and I should show you. I mean, you can imagine there could be thousands of tools in this list. So I'll do a quick search. Come up with Spring Compressor. You can see here the secondary field. That's actually a barcode. We've integrated a barcode scanner, so you can quickly get to the tool with a quick zap of the barcode scanner. I didn't bring it with me, though. Anyways, so in the checkout history now, you can see that there is a record checked out to Gary Devendorf. Check it back in. And again, take advantage of knowing who is the person checking that back in. So McKinstry will know who has checked the tools out and who has checked them back in.
So we're seeing multiple tables data presented in a way that people can figure out and is intuitive.
Yep, and so there it is back in the available tools list. Simple.
Oh, back to one.
All right, so just to recap, we've got a simplified design experience. If you went to Steve and Kevin's App in 60 Seconds presentation earlier this week, you saw how quick you can create an Access app. We offer predefined schema tables, so when you search for something, we've anticipated that users are going to want to track a certain number of things. We've got about 150 what we call nouns right now hosted on office.com, so when you do a search for projects, we give you a return, and we build you a little schema template. And once you're done, you get these polished professional results. So all of the Access apps are clean and beautiful and easy to use. And like I was saying, we leverage SharePoint. Every Access app is a SharePoint app. You get all of the goodness that's part of SharePoint, so it works on any browser. You can share it. You can just copy that URL and send it to someone else. They can hit that app and use it as much as they'd like.
So if someone says, I have this problem, and you go, I have a solution for you, just don't say it's Access. Say it's a SharePoint app because it is. When you're done, you can throw the Access client away, and your app runs in SharePoint. It is a full-on SharePoint app.
Exactly.
What's that?
Yes. Yeah, we'll
SharePoint Online on-prem, that's a good comment. There's someone dying with a question back there. But.
We
want to talk about what are your existing apps, how do you upgrade those or migrate those in. That's what this whole presentation's about.
Yeah, maybe we should get to that.
Yeah, we should get to that part. I know, people are dying. We're almost there. It's like two slides.
All right, and all Access apps are also have a SQL backend. So an Access app is a SQL, has a SQL database. It's a one-to-one relationship. So the beauty of that is the data's there in SQL, and you can get at it here. You see in the right part of the graphic, you don't have to just get at the data via Access. You can look at it through a whole bunch of tools that access SQL directly.
Right. When you come to it through SharePoint, SharePoint is talking to that relational backend. But you could talk directly to that relational backend with other tools and other things. So by moving our data up into SQL and making it a SharePoint application, then we now have central store for our data. It's no longer on someone's hard drive or someone's thumb drive or in someone's mail file. Central control, I go into a browser. Can I have access to that site from SharePoint? I can. I read permission, or do I read write, or do I have designer permission? So I can go in and I can access those things. I can share it. I can send you a URL and give you permission to the SharePoint site. That's all I have to do. Data hygiene, someone's keeping their information in a Word document, and there's typos and things. You saw with forms, I have validations, I have pick lists. I'm going to pick from another table of valid zip codes or something. I'm not going to have bad data there. And it's in the right container, referential integrity, relational, those kind of things. So. That's what we've solved. Now let's go into now that we have that platform in a nutshell. And by the way, there was four other presentations here at the conference you can look up about Access. And we have a blog with videos, short videos on things. So I'd go there and learn more about Access, but now let's talk about how to get from other systems, other places, to these Access applications. They don't call them databases anymore. So we're going to start out with Access. right? You have 50,000, you have all these old access databases. What do you do with those? Well, I call them legacy access databases. These are desktop. So you have desktop. And by the way, I'm including 2010. If you created a SharePoint, I mean, an access database in 2010 that uses lists as its data store, which was the first time available, the same thing applies here. If you want to move that data, you're going to use the same procedure. Again, your environment has lots of data that you don't know about. You have lots of access databases you don't know about. And Steve did a session called Taming the Beast about crawling your environment and finding out about what's there. So you might want to look that session up. And again, they may be poorly designed. They might be well designed. But you want to get that security, access control, warm fuzzy about the data being inside your control. So we're going to show you a demo now of migrating Northwind Trading Company, which is the classic, it's our hello world in the access world. You download that and learn everything from it. We're going to migrate that one up to 7. Yeah, I'm very slow with that.
All right, so here we are in the backstage, and I'm going to create a brand new custom web app. So I have to name the app first. Then I have to pick a location, and you can see a list of available locations here. I'm going to actually choose the SharePoint tenant we created for the conference. But I should point out here that IT can decide where access apps live, so that every time someone goes to create a new access app, it all gets funneled into the place IT decided. Pretty handy. So what we're doing now is creating a SQL Server database and a SharePoint app, and we're connecting them together.
And this is 365, by the way. We're going off to Chicago data center, and it's spinning all these things up.
This one might be the UK.
Might be UK? We created two just in case. No, this is not on-prem. If it was on-prem, and by the way, there was a session yesterday about this, you can set up a SQL Server instance on your on-prem environment, and that would essentially replace the Azure relational. So you could totally do that.
All right, so here we are in the designer. And the first thing I want to do, because I know that I have all my data in this desktop database, I don't want to add a new table. You saw that this is possible, and this is where you can find all those schema templates I mentioned before. But I'm going to go to Access. So the app is living on my desktop.
Well, my desktop.
Gary's desktop. Actually, it's in an email attachment, so let me just go to find it. Let's see.
Should be the second
that one.
Yeah.
All right.
And I downloaded this from the web, just the 2007 Access Northwind Trading Company. So.
All right. So here are all the objects in that particular desktop database. I'm going to select all of them. I'm going to move this dialog over so you can see the action while it's going on. All right. So you can see we're importing. And on the left, in that table menu that we talked about before, all of those tables from the 2010 database are being brought in. So it's going to be all the tables, all of the relationships, and then all of the data inside those tables. And what you get for free after the Access app is created is that you get all that navigation, the create, read, update, and delete functionality. All that beautiful UI is all done for you.
Well, the old UI is being left behind, and we're creating brand new UI automagically. So there's a lot of tables here. There's like 20 tables. Again, it was the sample. And we are using not only 365, but we're using the public preview. So you could go sign up yourself and do exactly this yourself.
In fact, you should. We encourage you.
Yeah. So I think the tables are created. Now the data is going up. Now, there should come up with a warning about
attachments.
There's a data type in the old Northwind called attachments. You can just stick blob things in. SQL doesn't let us do that, so we're not moving those. So it's a good thing to know that any attachments are not going to go this way.
Here's this expected error message.
So for every table that had attachments, it's saying, I left those out. So that's an issue. This is why they pay you guys the big bucks.
All right. So here's all the tables, and by default, they're all visible, but a lot of these are ones that don't really matter. So we can just go through and hide the ones that we know aren't important to the end user.
Just like they were hidden on the desktop.
Right, you know,
they
exactly.
They can't see all the tables. There's helper tables and things. Right, so the comment is here. Someone's already earning this money. He says, how do I deal with these attachments? Well, yeah, I can move them all into a document library and just put URLs inside of, yeah, that would be a solution. So, thanks for that. We just want to show you the bumps so that, you know, you don't get surprised at later on, but that's a good solution because you're using SharePoint, and if you're 365, you already have it, right? So,
all right, so I've hidden those tables now. Just a few clicks. And I saved it, and now let's go ahead and this launch app button, that's our favorite button here. So when you do this, it's going to open a browser and show you the app in real time, live and in person. So here we are.
We're an IE here, but we could be in all the popular browsers.
Are there other browsers? all right, so you can see now that all the tables are here. And there's the view selector across the top. And like I said, you get the default views that we supply, so the list view and the data sheet view, which should look familiar, looks a lot like an Excel spreadsheet.
You could even cut and paste between other Excel spreadsheets and things to this data.
Exactly.
It's pretty handy.
Let's look at customers, and you can see there's a related items control, and that indicates that we've also brought in the relationships from customers to orders. I can drill through and look at the orders that this customer has made. And all this is for free.
So that might be good enough for some of those Access apps.
That was really hard. I'm sweating.
Yeah.
All right. All right. So this is quite easy to do. You just simply, when you're going to add a new table, you just choose from external data and choose Access Database, and there's other choices there which we'll go into in a moment. So what you get when you bring in all this wonderful stuff from your existing database are the tables and the relationships, and that's, as I showed you, how we get the lookups in there.
All right, they're called lookups now instead of relationships, just because we're going after non-developer type people.
Exactly. But there are things that get lost. So forms, VBA, if you spend a lot of time with VBA, queries, calculations, reports, and macros are all going to be cut.
And other things. So all you're really getting is the tables, the relationships, and the data. But we auto-generate the rest.
Well, right, exactly. So you get your forms, your views, and your navigation. Create, read, update, and delete is all supplied. And there is some cleanup once
right.
you
But the UI looks pretty good right off the bat. You know, you could just use it. So, giant question over here. Yeah. So, right. Right. So the comment is, I have several forms my end users use, know, and love, and they're very complex and have a lot of work behind them. What then? You're telling me you just lost all that? And the answer is, stay tuned. We have an answer for you, but. In this migration, yes, that's all gone. But we have a better answer in a minute. So the question is, how do I edit the relationships or add new relationships or? Right. There's a modeling tool for drawing your relationships and creating them that way. Now you have to go add lookups. So we're going to try and get through a little further, and then we'll promise time for questions. So in the end, I have a SharePoint app. When he did this migration, he now has an app that he can put in the App Store. You know, he can put it in his, they keep renaming the marketplace to App Store and then your local store. I can deploy it. People can put it in their site and use that stuff. I'm inheriting SharePoint security and theme. So even if your background color is pink and your lettering's red or whatever, it inherits that. So your site will look like someone built it in SharePoint. You have central control. Again, I can turn off who has access, who doesn't have access. It's all SharePoint. Again, the deployment's really easy. You know, it's like, and I can also look at who deployed it. You know, who's using this one? I found a bug with it or something like that. So now we're going to solve the problem about the complex forms. So I want to leverage my existing code and the UI, and also I have these clients that are using it in the desktop, and they're perfectly happy, and you're going to come along and make their life miserable because you're going to a web interface that they're not used to, and it isn't quite as functional as what they could do with VBA and things. You could write Visual Studio add-ins for Access if you wanted, and you want to leverage that. But I also want to be able to share it and use it from the web. So we're going to show you a hybrid model. We're going to talk about this hybrid model. What does that mean? It means we're going to migrate the data and use the old client.
So the data goes from the 2010 desktop into SQL, and then you have a web app, but you still have a desktop app, and both of them are looking at the same SQL data. So here we are back in the designer, and this is the app that I just created by bringing in that 2010 database. So I'm going to go into the backstage. I click on connections, and I have to enable a read-write connection. And then I want to be able to view this read-write connection information.
So this is the information you use to connect to that back-end data, not going through SharePoint. Right? If I go into SharePoint, it knows who I am, it has my permissions and everything. We're now saying, if I want to come from another piece of technology into that relational store around, then here is the server name, the database name, and the username and password that's used for that connection. So you have to enable that, say, I want to let this happen, and then here's the information.
Sorry. Right, exactly. So in the interest of time, I won't spend a whole bunch of time cutting and pasting all of that SQL username, password, server name, and so forth. Instead,
oh, it should be the desktop, right?
Pay no attention. There's nothing to see here.
Okay, you got the right one.
Moving along. Anyway, so this this is a web database that I have already connected to a desktop database, or, well, they're both connected to SQL.
So when he went to the backstage and said expose it, it's for this one that's on the web, right?
So I'm going to look into my desktop, and it was copy, right? So.
Yep.
So here we are. This is the desktop Northwind.
Well, we turned off the default.
Oh, is it really going to make me?
Oh, because we shut it off. Yeah, try that.
Oh, rats.
I'll just go and.
Well, I wanted to show the one that was already connected.
I think that is the one that's already connected. Open it again and see if it asks once. You want to cut and paste it from the...
Well, but that was a different database. All right, I'm going to open my web database in Access. Go get that information.
You should always check the box saying save password.
Oh, that's
what we didn't do. We were just running this. Yeah, you can leave that open. Maybe that's the password, yeah. Username too. See, this connection is usually for SharePoint to be talking to the data store, so it created a GUID username and a password. So you need to copy the GUID. So yeah, the username.
This is demoing really well, by the way.
Yeah, now put the username in. Say okay, and hopefully we can see one table.
Ah, yeah, that was smooth.
Yeah.
Okay, so here we are in our desktop database, and just to show that it is connected, I'm going to change the name here of our first customer Company A. Our contact name is Anna Braniff. And I prefer the name Anna Banana.
Click off the row. And
I'll save it. Now I go back to my web app. Here we see Anna Braniff. Yeah, now it says Anna Banana. So we are connected.
It's both ways. I can edit it here in the browser. So not only am I using my old client with all my rich things, but I'm getting a bonus web client too. So maybe someone else says, I need access to some of that data, but I don't need the full-on thing. Here's a URL. So they're going against the same data store, but you've essentially generated a new client and a web client.
Exactly.
I didn't quite hear
that. What's that?
Right. Yeah. So the comment is, if you have old end users who are very fixed in their ways, they can keep using that, and new guys can use the web thing. And the web thing is not going to be—it's going to be missing some of the cool, sexy things they have. But you know what? They let them edit the data and do things, and you can extend this too. I could go in here and add new forms, new views, new stores. Right. So the comment is, what about scaling? I have many people, some people hitting it from the rich client, some people hitting it from the browser.
Right.
What am I going to do about locking and so on? This is full-on SQL Server. It's exactly as SQL Server works. You know, your settings, you can do it. So we end up with a new SharePoint application on top of our old existing application. Again, the SQL backend that gives us all the functionality around dealing with issues like that. If you have Office 365, this is all free. You have it. You can just use it. You don't have to deploy clients out to the end users. There's no code. We have macros and expressions that you can use in your macros, but there's no VBA code. You can't write bad code if you can't write code. And we're targeting end users. So when a guy comes to you and says, I need an app to track my blah, you say, great, here's a one-page video or tutorial, go do it yourself. And they can't really hurt themselves. And you end up with the app catalog. So if you want to make money, you have an idea for some industry app that you want to put out there, like think of it as like phone apps. Drop the mic. So think of it like a phone app. Someone can say, here's an app that does something interesting to my business, and I can get that, and you can charge for it. So, and there's presentations on that. So let's move to Excel. Okay, this guy's been very patient. Question. So the comment is, if I have a lot of VBA code, it's very complex, and the web client's not good enough. You're saying it's not because it doesn't have the VBA there. We're saying that you can keep using that old client by reconnecting the tables, but you also get a lightweight web client for free. Now, if you don't have to use it, you don't have to deploy it, you can still use the old rich client. But now my data at least lives in a place that's backed up. Yeah, I mean, you could do it already. I think that's your point. Today, I could just move all my access tables up to SQL and connect it. So I'm just showing you an easy way of doing it here. So, okay. So Excel spreadsheets. I think probably there's more data in Excel spreadsheets than anything else. It's just that it's out of control. And we have all kinds of companies that come to us, and we have a 10,000-row Excel spreadsheet running our production. It's like, why? Well, because we started with a very little thing, and it got bigger and bigger. And the problem with spreadsheets is, where's my data validation? You know, if I add an extra zero on a number by mistake, there's nothing in the form, no form saying, hey, this must be less than 100 or whatever. Searching and navigating around an Excel spreadsheet with find becomes a nightmare. Formula errors, I put it in the wrong place, the formula read the wrong place, and there's lots of horror stories about people coming up with the wrong values because the formula didn't do what they thought it would do. Historically tough to share, better now with Excel services. Put it up in SharePoint, people can do that. Non-relational. I have a lot of repeated data. So it gets really big because you're putting in people's zip code in the same zip code 100 times and so on. So you end up with a lot of duplicated information. I don't have lookups. And I can't do complex queries on it, finds and so on. So let's look at an Excel spreadsheet. Whoops. Yes.
All right, so for this demo, I'm actually going to use the tried and true trusty desktop access database. Now, we can certainly import data into a 2013 database, but there's a little trick in here that I just wanted to call out because it's kind of fun. So I'm going to create an app to track national parks. I've got all this data in an Excel spreadsheet. I actually grabbed it off the web. So here we are on the desktop, and click External Data and choose Excel. I'm going to browse, familiar browse experience, and find the
desktop.
That's right. Find the spreadsheet, National Parks. All right, and I'm going to import it. And this wizard has a lot of clicks, but it's very effective. All right. And you'll see the same exact flow if you do it in 2013. But there's some tiny text here at the bottom, and this is kind of what I wanted to show off. So I would like a wizard to analyze my table after importing the data. So here you get kind of a little primer on what it means to normalize data, that if you have another column with several repeated, that it's better to normalize it off into another table. All right, so it has taken a look at our data, and it has told us that it looks like perhaps we should have two tables.
I think that's parks.
Is it? Okay.
Because that's the many side.
Oh, you're right.
So national parks, a state can have many national parks. So notice the little one and the little infinity sign and the thing if you have really good eyes. So the one is, you know, for one state, many parks. And this is a very simple example, but you could think that if you had big data, you know, lots of rows and rows and rows, this would actually help someone who doesn't understand normality.
Oh, and here it looks like it wants me to make a correction. It's taking a look at the data. I scroll down. Oh, I see there's a misspelling. Alaska with an extra A.
So it found Alaska, 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 and then something looked really close to Alaska. It says, I bet that's a typo. And it's asking you, is that a typo? Do you want to change it or not?
In this case, yes, I want to change it to Alaska. But here it sees Arkansas. It's pretty close.
So that's close, too. Is that a typo? And you just say, no.
I want to leave that.
So bad data getting better.
All right.
The top one is the old data all together.
Right.
And here's a new table.
So you can see that it's separated out and done a lookup to the ID in the other table. This is in an Access desktop database. You could import it into an Access 2013 and create yourself a web app about
national
parks.
See how it built, also at the bottom there, National Parks query, it built the query between the two. So I now have tables and a relationship all built for me. So we're in the desktop app here. The next step, as Bob says, is to migrate it up to the web. So should we click? So an Excel spreadsheet is a really good way of collecting data. You can send someone a spreadsheet and say, give me the data. They can bring it in as XML or comment eliminated. There's lots of ways of getting Excel and massaging it. And then I can just turn those into tables. Now, if I brought it in as one big table, the value is a little less than if I break it up and use the full relational part of that. So this import wizard is a great way to just lead you through doing that. The table analyzer, again, makes it relational, helps you with that relational thing. There's a really big point there that's escaping me. But the advantage is I reduce redundancy. If you have like everyone's name and what high school they went to, and you have the high school name listed every row, high school this, Bob, high school Fred, high school like that, could I put the high school in another table with all this information, address, and so on, and then link to it? That's how relational tables work. So I'm going to reduce that redundancy of repeating that line of data over and over and over again from the spreadsheet. I get data validation in the form. I can make sure that it's a pick. So which state was that national park in? And you can't pick something that's not a state because it's coming from the states table. I have an upgrade path. Again, we're in SQL. We can connect this data another way. I can do complex queries on the data because it is relational data. And I could use standard tools to generate and use those queries. So I can share it on the web. Now I have a URL. We generated forms and views. You didn't see it, but if we up the next step, we generate the forms and the views, the related items like we showed in the other migration, and I don't have to put a client on anyone's desktop, no code, central administration, security, and so on. Now, we're getting to apparently half the people in the room care about Lotus Notes. Which I'm really happy about, you guys, because I added this in there and I got some pushback. The pushback was nobody cares. So apparently you guys care, and I appreciate that. So talk for a minute about Lotus Notes, and it sort of is the COBOL of the current industry. It's like, yep, I used to do that. I can talk to all kinds of people about Lotus Notes, and I used to work at Lotus. That's why I know about Lotus Notes. But it's a legacy, and there's a large number. I've actually, the record, I think, from a customer is 300,000. They claim to have 300,000 Notes databases.
Oh, God.
So, oh, my goodness. They have 200,000 employees and 300,000 databases, they claim. So it's not relational. Lotus Notes data is a document sort of level store. And its future, as someone who used to work at IBM, can say it's questionable. Now, if you go into Lotus Notes, you can just go right to export in the menu. So in export, it says, hey, I can do a tabular table, I can do structured text, I can do a 1-2-3 spreadsheet, which, by the way, I then could migrate into Excel afterwards, common delimited values. So that's from the Lotus Notes menu. However, the trick I'm going to show you that I think is way cool, I'm easily impressed, though, is that here's a Lotus Notes database. So I'm in the Notes 7 client, because that's the client that I still have. I know it's not supported anymore. But it would look close to the same in 8.5. So here's a Lotus Notes client. And you probably know, you Notes guys, that there's also a web interface to this database. If the HTTP task is running in Lotus Notes, your Domino server, you can find that same exact information through the URL. So it'll be like server name. I think I have the syntax of it. No, I don't. So you have, actually I do in the review. So by the server name, the database name, and the view name, boom, you'll see this in the URL. So I can go in a browser and actually see my data. This gives me a window into that data. I don't have to go to the administrator. I don't have to write Lotus script. There's my data. Now, a cool trick that I'm going to do live, if I can remember how to do it. Yeah, go ahead. There. Here is a URL that gives me the view into my Notes data. I can click on one of these documents. And by the way, it's really ugly because I created it, so feel free to. So here's my data in Lotus Notes. I use this URL to get to it. It gives me one page of data. See how it says next and previous? So this is actually HTML table under the covers. If you do view source, you're going to see an HTML table. This could be useful. If you add a parameter to the end of the URL that says ampersand count equal minus 1, it looks like nothing happened. But it did. It actually says, instead of giving me one page of data, give me all the data. So now I have an HTML table here of all of the data in the view. Why is that useful? Well, I copy this, and we go to Excel. Full size. And we're just going to create a blank spreadsheet. But here we're going to go to data from the web. Pay no attention to that error. When I say data from the web, it pops open a little browser control. So this wizard now says, okay, from the web, where on the web? So in the URL, I'm going to put the modified view URL. It gives me all of the data. I click on go. And there we have the view with a few modifications. See the little yellow arrows? Those are, the wizard has looked at the design elements of this page. And it said, I found something here you might be interested in. One of those being an HTML table that I can click on. Oh, you want that HTML table? Yes, I do. Import. Where do you want to put it in the spreadsheet? Oh, I guess we'll leave it there. Okay, there's all my data from my Notes database, or at least from that view, in an Excel spreadsheet. What can I do with it now? Well, you just saw it, Bob. I could import this into a desktop app that uses the table analyzer, and then again to the web, or I can go directly to the web, but then I don't get the table analyzer. But here's a very simple method. It's just without even telling your notes people, you can say, hey, let me just try that database over there. I'll do this step, move it up there, go to the end user. What do you think of this? How's that for you? I got a view, let me tweak it. It's a great way to learn, right? You guys are saying, ah, this access thing sounds good, but how much time do I have? You say, well, let me just do this, bring it in, put it up there. Because I find that learning without data in my app is hard. The data's there, I can figure it out pretty quickly. So there's a question there. Can you do this with current Excel? Yes, back to 2007. Office 2007 and on has this feature in it. So I shouldn't say that, we're Microsoft. No, no, you have to buy the latest version. No. But if you have Office 365, you have the latest version. So let's jump back to... Right, and I think my next slide talks about a couple of tips about this. So, one, that count equal minus one, by default, will work up to 1,000 records. If you need more than that, you have to go into the server and just set that setting for the whole server. You say, hey, from now on, when they say minus equal one, the max, there's a setting called the max. On my server, I set it to 10,000. You can set it to whatever. So be aware of that. If you do it and say, Gary said this works and I only got 1,000 records, that's why. You need to go into the server settings. And then I just imported it from the web. And once in Excel, I could do things to it in Excel if I wanted to. I could add columns, clean up things. I could pull in a couple different views, for example, put them in the spreadsheet. And I had to do it into the desktop access database if I want to use that table analyzer. Like I say, the table analyzer, which is probably as old as we are, isn't in the web version. So if I create a web database first and import it into there, it won't ask to do that. But if I do this, I end up with a SharePoint app. So my data now lives in a SharePoint app. Great. I got a modern web interface. The number one complaint about those databases, end users go, what the hell is this? Because people don't want to spend time making it pretty. I could also link to SharePoint list data in that same app, in that web app. I could point to a SharePoint list and say, here's a table, and I could do lookups between those. It's read-only lookup, though. Be aware of that. So realize that it's not an island that can actually go out and pull in more data from the rest of your environment. So the application goes into your app catalog where people can download it. You can control who has access, count how many people have used it and deployed it. Again, no code. And it's in SQL. So it's an upgrade path. It's in SQL. I can do whatever I can do with SQL data, I can do it. And so therefore, I have future supportability. You know, I'm in 365.
All right. So one thing you can do is to publish your app. So after you're done creating this awesome app, you can actually package it up as an app package, and you can use this maybe for backup if you'd like, or to publish it to a different location, or if you have a Microsoft Developer account, you can actually submit it to the SharePoint store and charge for it and become an instant millionaire. So I'm going to go through and show you how that's done, how to package up an app.
Yep.
So here we are in that same McKinstry Tool Tracker app. And all the apps that you find in the SharePoint store from Microsoft, you're going to be able to open using this this settings gear in the upper right corner.
Right. So we're in the browser, working the app, and we can go up and say, I now want to edit this or something in the client.
So doing that opens this app up in the Access client. And where I could make modifications to it. As a matter of fact, I could link in a SharePoint list. It doesn't look like we really have time, I guess. But let me just show you the app in the client. Here we are. Okay. So this takes a really long time. I hope you brought some toothpicks. I'm going to go to File. Actually, it doesn't take long. This is supposed to be a joke.
I was choking on a toothpick. So it's bringing information down from the server so they can populate the backstage. And
yesterday I had the audio hooked in while this was happening, and I kept hitting file, and every time I did that, it went bung, bung. People were screaming and ears were there. Bleeding. All right. All right. So save as. So just simply file, save as, and you click save as package. It's that easy. So I'll save it with a name.
Notice the checkbox.
All right. So if you don't click the checkbox, you get just a clean and clear app with all of your views and your tables and your relationships, but no data. I'm choosing to back it up with all the data. I'll save it to the desktop. And now we've taken a complete snapshot of this web app, packaged up in a .app file, and now we're storing it on the desktop, but we could put it anywhere we thought was secure to back it up.
So when you go to publish one of these applications, it's going to ask you where do you want to publish it from, and you're going to say from this .app file. It's going to want you to upload it, and then you're done. It also can move it from one farm to the next or give it to your friends. It's all packaged up, with or without data.
There we are.
Go look on the desktop.
All right, so here we see the .app package in the desktop. Tools. Is that it?
Yeah, that was it. It said app file.
Yeah, but I want it to be the real thing.
Desktop.
I guess that is it.
Yeah.
Anyway, all right, so now let's say I wanted to instantiate that app somewhere else. I'm going to go back to my SharePoint site, and as you know, this app is hosted on SharePoint, so I'm going to click back to site here, and that brings me back up to my team site. So what I'm going to do is navigate over to the app catalog that we've created on the SharePoint site. And because every Access app is also a SharePoint app, I'm going to choose Apps for SharePoint out of the left nav. And here I just have to click Add New App. And again, here's the familiar browse experience on the desktop, Tools 2. Now this is bringing the app from the desktop and putting it in our app catalog. We can take questions while we're waiting if you'd like.
It says it shouldn't take long. Yeah.
Exactly. That's handy.
I like the new friendly messages. It upsets some people.
All right.
It's got the little new asterisk next to it, see?
So now I'm going to go back to my home site, site contents, and let's say one of these apps wasn't the one I needed. I click Add an App. Now you can see right here that Tools 2 is available for you to add to your site. So this is a great way for you to be able to share your apps across your organization, or as I said, upload your apps to the store and make millions.
Pesos.
Lira.
Okay, so we saw how you could, create it, publish it, as it, share it out. The deployment's pretty good, because it was a real problem in the past how to deploy those Access databases. You had to go to everyone's desktop, and you had to do different kind of things.
Yeah, this is
so. These are just some screenshots. So when you guys download this deck later on, you actually see the steps we went through. So, conclusion, because I said we'd be on time, and we want plenty of time for questions, and that is that you have out-of-control data, whether you know it or not, or whether you want to admit to it or not. Access services is a good way to sort of help solve that problem by enabling your end users to solve the problem and not backing up IT's backlog of information. Get control of your data that's out of the edges, again, you may not know about. Lotus Notes is sort of in the gray area. Is it known or not known about? But there's a lot of it out there. If you have 365, you have everything you need and you can go ahead. If you have an on-prem SharePoint environment, you need to set up some things. There's a white paper and a presentation we did yesterday on how to do that. The point is to safely empower your end users. Let those guys go out and do these things. And you can delete it and turn off access to a certain person, I'll let them do it, and so on. But then the data ends up in a place that you're more comfortable with. Go right now. All our demos are running off of this public preview. So if you go to office.com/preview, we do say, though, and we've all made this mistake, you want to pick the Office small business or the enterprise versions. If you pick the smaller ones, they don't have access services. So
that graphic is wrong. I should point out it's not home. It's not available on home premium. So small business or enterprise.
Yeah, and this is exactly what we did. So we didn't have any special Microsoft thing. We just went to the public thing and did all our demos from there.
It was special Microsoft thing.
I will admit we told the support guys to keep an eye on our server this week. So we'll admit to that because we're not out. So again, these were the sessions by people on our team. The access team did these sessions. And
yep, check them out on video.
Yeah, go back and download them, whatever, watch them on the video. And then these were related ones around the applications and the app model. And definitely check out our blog. Our blog has some really good short videos that are really well produced that help introduce the concepts, especially for people back in your office who don't want to listen when you say access, they turn off. You know, just play some videos.
Yeah, tell them tips and tricks there too about app building.
Right, and we're going to put more and more there, things that we learn and as we go there. Brings us to questions, exactly the right amount of time. So right up, is there a mic? Just that if you use the mic, it ends up in the recording and people can get the question. So why don't you ask, you can ask yours, everyone else go to the mics, and I'll repeat it, so. So the question is, in the past, if I linked all these access databases to SQL, you know, connected those tables, have them in a nice secure place, that I end up with block locking, and it would basically lose data and crash part of SQL? Deadlocks. Right, and so the question is, hey, how are we solving that? And I will say I have no idea other than 365 is a service, so we can fix things as we're driving down the road, and we keep make changes. Newer versions, we have to have SQL 2012 in order to do this, by the way. So you're using the latest and the greatest. So I'm hoping that those issues don't come up.
Well, also, every Access app is its own SQL database. So you're not sharing it. You're not sharing the data in that SQL database with other Access apps or other apps. You can get at it to do reporting and so forth, as we talked about. But it has its own discrete SQL database for that app.
Right.
So I was hoping. As soon as it's a web app and you've imported data, it's in SQL in its own dedicated discrete SQL database. I don't know.
I don't know.
Greg?
I did want to stop for a second, though, and say Bob's first SharePoint conference as a presenter, and let you guys say thank you for coming. And then if no one wants to stay for questions, they can leave. But we're going to be right here. So thank you for coming. All right. So now questions. And oh, wait, there's a guy at the mic. Let me get him, because he's following the rules. Yeah.
Well, Kevin, do you know the answer to that question? Do we have an access person on site? Is there a doctor in the house?
They're not syncing.
It's talking right to it.
Okay.
Next.
Yeah.
This is related to security. When you enabled the SQL Server for edit, you got one ID, one password. Is that the way you get it, so that you give that to the person with the client version? They have to have that ID. Well, if you have 50 people with that client version, they all have the same ID password. Now they have full access to that SQL Server database that they then could get through possibly other methods.
So you're talking about
you lose that security.
Not going through SharePoint.
Correct.
I'm going through some external system to talk directly to that, and we had to enable that. We'd say turn on that connection, and now there's a server name, database name, username, password
that's one.
because that's how SharePoint talks to it, is with the one behind the firewall.
Right.
And you're saying, can multiple people use it at the same time? Is that the question?
Well, no. The key is you give that password and ID out to 50 people, but they shouldn't have access maybe to every table in that database. So now you've given them access to edit every table, even though from on the SharePoint site you gave them only access to these two tables.
There's two connections. One is a read-only connection, so I can enable just a read-only connection, which has a separate username and password. And then there's the one that has the read-write. And there's also a button in the backstage that says reset password. So if you say, you know, this, I think people are using that, whatever, I can reset it.
But you got to be cautious, though, when you give that ID password out.
Yeah, it's a security thing. You've given the keys to the castle.
Yeah, okay.
Absolutely, it's a good comment.
We should also call out that there's not table-specific permissions.
Right, either you get to the table or you don't, or the database
or
you don't.
App or
you get
not.
To all of it, or but you can be read-only. So back over to this mic.
I wonder if there's a good way to integrate these access applications that look great with the rest of the SharePoint functionality. For instance, document libraries or vice versa, having some of the access parts in web parts somewhere in the portal or something. Are there means for that?
So when you say upgrade, you mean like
no,
I've already...
No, not for upgrading, but integrating access application functionality with portal functionality in SharePoint.
So you're saying, yes, you have this application, but I'd like to use some of this in another part of my SharePoint site.
Yeah.
So I'd like to have...
Or vice versa, having document libraries attached to relational data living in Access.
Right.
That we can't do yet. What we can do is link to a SharePoint list on a read-only basis.
Right, we do the read-only, we pull in, but you're saying I'd like to expose it out.
Yeah.
And...
Okay.
We're working on it.
We're working on it. There's nothing we can say about that at the moment. Yeah, that's you. You're good.
Yes.
So the question is, if I have an old Lotus Notes database, I can just put it into a list, too. If I bring it into Excel, I can then go, say, create a list based on the Excel spreadsheet, and I have it as a list. And then I get check-in, check-out, I get all those list features. And I guess my answer would be sort of, is the data leaning towards a relational store? Should it go there? Is it a bunch of data that I'm going to be, you know, sorting, filtering, you know, different things in? Or is it individual document level kind of stuff? I guess if it's document level stuff, you know, that you think of it as that, I would probably put it in a list. But a lot of them are, people use Lotus Notes when they shouldn't have, and it should have been a real database. Especially if there's a relation that should be there, a one-to-many relationship, child-parent kind of thing, I would then put it into Access.
But to answer the first question, which was, can many people share it at once? Yes, you're on SharePoint, and so anybody who you've shared that URL to and who has permissions can use that app. I mean, we have a reorg going on right now after we ship Office. Everybody's free to move around and check things out, and we're using an Access app to manage that. So we've got probably 300 to 500 people who all use that app at once. There's 6,500 records in it, and everybody can use it at once.
Yep. So at the mic.
Sorry, I'm losing my voice. If you are packaging an app for App Store sale for an on-premises purchase, what's the SQL provisioning look like for one of those people?
Okay, so when you say SQL provisioning, you mean just in Access services in general?
Right, so it uses SQL as a backend now, and I want to buy an app as an end user, but that's going to have to provision a database locally. Obviously, I'm not talking about Azure, but on-premises. What happens with that provisioning process?
Access Services, which is part of SharePoint, does all that for you. When you configure Access, a SharePoint environment, and your separate on-prem SQL server, you tell it, here's how your settings are, how you communicate, and then after that, you're done. When you go in there and say, create app, it does it under the covers. So there's no extra steps. There's no giving them permissions or, yep.
Up front?
Down in front, yeah.
Make use of managed metadata.
We're getting a database question. Managed metadata. Greg's reading. So not that we know of, but so then in the back, yes.
They're all tables in the back end.
So the other thing is, if I want to do the attachments there,
Right.
Well, it wouldn't be actually in the Access app. You'd have to use a URL.
Well, no, the URL is in a field inside the Access
well,
database.
Sure.
That's what he's saying.
But the actual...
Yeah, you put the URL inside a field value. So the value is, you know, document A, and here's its URL. And it could be a live... Well, you can do a lookup, but you won't get the data type that you were putting over there. So the lookup looks for data. It's not going to look for an attachment. So I know what you're saying, I know what you're doing. You're going to, there's a hole in the bucket. We're going around and around. But so.
Yes.
Oh, that's a great question. I'm pretty sure the answer is no, but that's my first blush for that. So if I, you see, the question is, I have a SQL database that I already have, know and love, and I'd like to give it that access front end. So how can I do that? And Steve's raising his hand. Right. Open up the Access client, connect up to that data ODBC source, whatever, import all the data, and then pub, you know.
And when you import through that operation, it's really Access is just orchestrating that connection between your old SQL database and the database.
Right. So we can't wrap your old SQL database in Access.
So here, when in the add tables flow, if you want to choose from external data,
SQL Server is one of the choices.
Data. Other questions? Yes?
Yes. A SharePoint?
No, it has to be on the same.
I know, I was solving the problem the same way myself, but yeah, you can't. You can't use it. An external list can't be a lookup list.
Right. The list has to live in the same place as the app.
We'll stay here for people who are shy. For a little bit, we got another 2 or 3 minutes. But other than that, thank you all for coming.